Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominique.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. So as we record this, we've just got back from the Malvern Auto Jumble.
Yeah, what a fantastic weekend it was.
Absolutely cracking day. I couldn't believe how many people were there.
Record turnout.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah, brilliant. I was blown away. Despite the weather forecast,
yes.
Didn't look favourable. Everyone came out in their droves, which, I was really chuffed with.
Lots and lots of people buying, selling, drinking tea. I have to say, as I approached the showground, I couldn't see the tops of the hills because they were so engulfed in cloud. And I was like, oh, this could be a quiet one. But it did not put people off.
I know I've said this before, but when you stand there and it's still dark in the morning and then you see some birds, you hear the birds flying over and the mist lifts sometimes. It's the most magical place to spend some time.
Yeah.
Because this year, well, same as this time last year, we had the Kildare Hall, which was the British restoration element.
Yes.
So we didn't just have Land Rovers.
We had,
this time I managed to shoehorn some Jaguar goodness in there. So Jaguar enthusiasts came along.
The Jag.
Oh. Did you see the XK?
I did see the XK, yes.
That was the last of the line XK.
Right.
That sort of had sort of bucket seats in it.
Oh, right. I didn't get that close.
Yeah,
not
sort of bucket seat. Like, it's a factory spec. I can't remember the, is it the XKRS, I think it is.
Yes, I know the one.
Phenomenal thing. But I have to say, it didn't sound as good as mine because mine's got...
Yours has got a fruity...
Silencer delete.
Yeah. You'll have forgotten what it sounds like, though, yours. It's been away for so long.
Yeah, it has, but it's not. Hopefully not coming back.
Well, yeah, hopefully. I was more taken with a rather lovely Case International four-wheel drive tractor in the corner. That was very nice.
I thought that was David Brown.
No.
No, of course it was a Case.
It was the early colours, but it was a Case International.
Yeah, because the Case IH Club was there.
Yeah.
There was a couple of... Triumph TR8, well, TR7 and a TR8. We had Border Counties, the club, with their couple of old tractors and the old lorry.
Cool old lorry was wicked.
That's fantastic.
I love all that stuff.
And do you know what, though? All of these people that came along, including Series 1 Club, Series 2 Club, not forgetting the Land Rover goodness.
Of course, they've been supporting the Auto Jumble at Malvern for many years now. They always bring something different. They always turn up en masse, and they really lift the atmosphere, don't they?
They do. They just add that little bit extra. So, you know, if you've gone and bought all your spares, you can go and have a look round.
Mm.
Not forgetting, we had Mr. Henry Cole, my mate.
Steve's BFF was there, wasn't he? He was had a stand of his own, and they were shooting a bit for TV, weren't they?
Yeah, so I think Drunk and Disorderly is now on air on, I think it's the channel Blaze.
Yeah, it is Blaze.
So it's a Freeview channel, and so they're producing. They have to produce 2 episodes of that a week.
Really?
That includes, I was talking to the producer, this is really interesting. So they have to source the sheds and the locations.
Yeah.
Buy the item, restore it. It's all quite genuine. People think it's scripted. And they said, no, this is real money.
Yeah.
They took a decent amount at the show.
Right.
That money then goes back in to buy more stuff. Budgets are not as significant as you think.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to produce 2 of those episodes a week. So
it's mad.
So our show provided them a perfect platform to be able to film. And they film genuine transactions taking place.
But I have to say, every time I walk past their stand, they were inundated with people. And hopefully there was some buying and selling going on. But I know there was a lot of selfie taking and a lot of chatting back and forth and signing of things, which is lovely.
And that was just you.
Yeah, well, I'm not round there every Sunday for dinner like you are, so
been to Henry's house.
Homies for life.
But I've never been around for Sunday dinner.
Well.
I'm not that, yeah.
You might be able to...
He works pretty much 7 days a week.
You could rate his Yorkshire pudding game if he lets you over for a bit.
I wonder if his wife home makes them.
Oh, well, we'd have to find out, wouldn't you?
I don't think if you went to Henry Cole's house, you'd have Aunt Bessie's Yorkshire puddings.
No, maybe not.
He's... I know he acts up to the camera, but when you talk to him on a normal level...
He's a proper enthusiast.
Yeah. People say, but Sam Lovegrove and Alan Milliard and all of those guys and Skid, they're the ones with the knowledge. No. He knows what he's doing.
He wouldn't be in the place he is now if he didn't know what he was all about. And he's a proper Land Rover man as well.
No, genuine. Funnily enough, he turned up in a Discovery 5.
Oh, right. I didn't see that.
Yeah, that's his sort of what we class as the work car. So he will drive, you know, the sound guy, the producer, whatever, to the various gigs. I mean, they were the Newark Motorcycle Auto Jumble last weekend.
Right.
Because I had a day off for weeks.
So I had a feeling.
Yeah. No, we're the same. But yeah, and he was saying he's got... he had a problem with his Discovery 5, actually.
Surely not.
Yeah, he did. And water... the door filled up with water, the driver's door.
Oh, right.
Not filled up, but it was sloshing around in there.
How strange.
Yeah, water had got trapped in there.
I've not heard that. I know they had issues with the windscreen fitment on the early ones, but I've not heard that.
Yeah, no, this was a 23 plate.
Oh, quite new then.
But his number plate, so probably shouldn't give this away, but it had JNK for junk at the end.
That's cool.
Yeah, for junk, yeah.
Like it.
Yeah, it's good. But he has a late... a new Range Rover for the weekend.
Oh, does he?
Plus I know series.
He's got series all over the place, hasn't he? For his, well, you always see him in the background and they'll go out and do things on the telly programmes. I really enjoy Shed and Buried and Junk and Disorder.
The reality is, and it's very real, when they buy something, it is his money.
Yeah.
And when they sell things, that is still his money.
Right.
And sometimes he'll make a bit, sometimes he'll lose, but then they reinvest. But what was interesting, like 8 years ago, I was on there, Find It, Fix It, Drive It.
Right.
Where they bought a V8 coil sprung hybrid lightweight from Tanks A Lot.
Oh, yeah.
They did a deal with him, bought it, fixed it up, rattle canned it, matte satin black. And I organised a day at the Billing Off Road course to film an episode with my mate Mark Canvin.
Mm-hmm.
And we were leading the way, and him and Sam Lovegrove. He still owns that Land Rover.
Does he really?
Yeah. It's in the back. He said, do you know what? He said, you know what it's like, Steve? He said, I've got a big shed, my massive sheds, barns, yeah. Really. And it's in the back there. And he said, I might dig it out. I said, you should bring it to Malvern and put it for sale.
100%.
And he said, yeah, I probably will. Because it makes room for more.
I had a few Land Rovers for sale at this one, which I think is a first for us, isn't it? At an auto jumble. There was a lot of interest. There was a couple of Discovery 2s. There was a Minerva.
Yes, it was, yeah.
Something else, possibly another series. But yeah, lots of people having a good old poke around them. Really good to see.
I was quite keen on them. Apparently, they don't drive very nice. There was that, is it the Reynolds?
Ah, yeah.
Wharton, is it called?
Very popular for overland conversions. But I was more, yes, I did see that when I turned up.
That was for sale when earlier in the day, then it disappeared.
Like a big four-wheel drive truck.
Yeah, kind of.
Like a military truck type thing.
Weird.
I was absolutely having a moment over the Unimog.
Yes.
Oh, my word. What a thing. Oh.
Yeah.
There's something about Unimogs. The square cab, I can't remember, the U1300s, is it? They're like...
So that one was a bit later to the design that I really like.
Is the rounded cab, like the forestry type, bubbly cab ones?
No, that's the early one, isn't it? Oh, no, they've got the late ones.
It's, yeah, there's two versions.
Again, haven't they?
Yeah.
And then there's the square of a late one.
Yeah.
I don't know much about Unimogs.
I don't know the model numbers off by heart. But
the late 70s ones had a rounder look. But I like the 1980s ones.
I know. I can picture what you mean.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
Unimogs are wicked. And that sounded awesome as well. I think it was straight piped and he was giving it raps out of the gate
that
when he
sale?
Left. Don't think so.
Yeah. But what a cool thing.
Serious money. I think there's one on eBay, the same shape as the one that turned up. It's like 28,000 quid. They're a proper specialist bit of kit. If you need one, you need one type thing.
Well, I was... Yeah, but sometimes it's not about the need, isn't it? I mean, you want one.
Yeah.
Do you reckon you'll ever own one?
I don't think so.
Because you don't have an absolute need to tie that kind of level of money up.
And not only that, as I often say, we're so blessed with parts availability for Land Rovers and, you know, the bits, especially for the series and the, you know, your earlier coil sprung Defenders... They're everywhere, and as we saw at the auto jumble, bits can be had for very sensible money. It won't bankrupt you to enthusiast own a Land Rover, whereas a Unimog or something of that ilk, parts are far more specialised, harder to get, going to be more expensive.
You send off for them.
The tyres for them are like 2,000 quid. Do you know what I mean? They
might fall under the new ruling of they have to be under 10 years old as well. Possibly, because of the weight. I'm not sure where the weight threshold comes in for HGVs, the tyres have to be under 10 years old now.
Not something I've looked into, but yeah. Very cool.
I don't know.
They're one of those things where you don't want to own one yourself. You want to know someone who's got one so you can have all the enjoyment with none of the hassle.
Bit like an MB Track.
I have one of them as well. Yeah. MB Tracks are cool.
MB Track from the 1980s.
One of them in the next village to where I grew up, one of the farms in that village had an MB Track, and it got parked up after they'd used it for years and years, and it sat in the yard and you could see it from the road. I used to drive past it all the time on the way to work, and I was like, oh, I'd love to save that. But again, a whole other kettle of fish compared to Land Rovers.
Yeah, and they're big.
They are big.
They're properly big. Not like a little old Sears one you can tuck around the back. And...
I did really like that Minerva. I was having a right good poke.
It sounded nice.
Quite a lively sounding little petrol engine, and yeah, really cute dimensions. You just thought you could have that and it wouldn't get in the way. I love how narrow they are.
Yeah, they're lovely. I really like them. But yeah, just generally the whole vibe. I have an appreciation for the atmosphere that you create these shows, and yesterday was a fantastic one.
Everyone was pleased to be there, weren't they?
Yeah, zero. I mean, cue the emails, but there was no complaints.
No. In fact,
no moans.
We have
no
got moans. To say a massive thank you. Massive thank you to Wayne from the South Wales Land Rover Club. We were on our way, so I can't remember what we were doing, loitering about.
I hadn't seen you most of the day. It bumped into you. We were chatting, weren't we? Yeah. I was off doing jobs. And then we were approached by Wayne, who we now know as Wayne.
Yes, a gentleman came up to us and he said, I really enjoy the podcast and I've bought you a present. And we were like, you don't have to do that. That's very kind of you. And I feel quite rude because we didn't actually look in the bag. We sort of took it. And I don't know, sometimes it's a bit, you never know.
Accepting gifts isn't something that we do very often.
No.
Basically, no one hardly ever gives us anything.
And also, it's not we don't expect it, do we?
We're just
having a laugh. But he gave us this bag, and I didn't want to look in front of him because I didn't know if that was rude or whatever. But I had a nice chat to him, and he said, like I said, it was from South Wales Land Rover Club, and really enjoys what we do, and he had a good time, didn't he, at the Auto Jumble. And we got back to the van at the end of the day and opened it up. He's only done us personalised pint glasses.
Steve's beer.
And Martin's beer on these like etched glasses and two bottles of Butty Back, which is my favourite beer.
Have you said that before then? Or has he just struck absolute gold?
He either has heard it somewhere or I've written it somewhere, or he has as good a taste as I do.
Fantastic. So Wye Valley.
Wye Valley Brewery, Butty Back, absolute nectar. Whenever I'm up...
I've never tried it.
Have you not?
No, I'm really looking...
We should
be drinking it now, but it's, being honest, it's too late in the day now to be...
Yeah, we've got to drive later. Yeah. But whenever I go to Britpart or I'm ever in that area, over Christmas when I went to Green Laning in the Discovery 5, the pubs around Shropshire and that sort of area, Wales, they all have it on tap and it is amazing beer. I love it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we were absolutely blown away. So thank you, Wayne, because...
I had a really good chat with loads of lovely people on Sunday, to be honest. And can't remember the guy's name, but he said, I've recently got into Land Rovers. I've got a Series 3. And I've been in classic cars my whole life, but I've never had a Land Rover. And I've recently bought this. And he's just like, I'm blown away by how into it everyone is and how friendly everyone is. He said, it's unlike any other sector of... the car enthusiast world to what he's experienced before. He's just like everyone, it doesn't matter what you've got, it doesn't matter in whatever state it's in. He just says everyone's just so up for it and everyone's just, you know, there for the same reason.
Yeah, I suppose it is quite unusual.
And it's, you see it.
Attract a certain type.
The range of people you see at all the events, but really, really, it was a really good day. And of course, this is the first Auto Jumble of three this end of the year. So we've got Ripon next and then Newbury.
Yeah, first weekend of March is Ripon, which we love again.
North Yorkshire.
Because it's on the race course and it brings a whole host of new traders, you know, traders from Cumbria, Scotland, Yorkshire, Newcastle, Durham, and it's a new load of stock and you think, brilliant. It's just fantastic.
And it's a lovely venue as well, Ripon Racecourse, isn't it?
It is. And that's another place I love being at when the It's still dark when we arrive on a Sunday morning. We're there on a Saturday, obviously. And then the Sunday morning, it's still dark. And then the mist lifts across that field.
Yeah. It's really...
The key to this is come and trade, but come on the Saturday.
You're giving away the secrets now.
Oh, yeah,
but it's fine. You can do it.
Yeah, trade on the... set up on a Saturday so you get to experience the race course first thing on the Sunday morning. You get all the geese flying over because there's the river and the canals nearby.
Yeah.
And you get all the wildlife flying over. It's just fantastic.
It is brilliant. I'm really looking forward to coming up to Ripon. And of course, Newbury, the biggest one at the end, was it? End of March.
Right. This is the thing. So it's the last weekend or the last Sunday of March this year. It's usually in April.
Yes.
But because of Easter this year, it's in March. So make sure you put that in your calendar.
Yes. And
hopefully the LRM calendar if you've got one.
Indeed. You should have one, shouldn't you, really?
Which if you're a true fan, you'd have one.
January issue. And it's a splendid calendar. Of course, that calendar is sponsored by our friends at Howden Classic, who were also there on Sunday. And I sticker bombed Ian's Land Rover with LRM podcast stickers. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it was nice to see his Land Rover in one piece and in the correct original shape.
Yes, quite. It was funny. He said, I'll come to the front and look down the driver's side, which is where the worst of the impact was. And he's that lovely, lovely job reassembling it. And the paint, whoever's painted it, it's done a bang up job. It's a great match. And it just looks, you wouldn't know it had any, had a mishap. Then you go to the passenger side and you see 20 odd years worth of like some people ripples. Leaning on it parking dings. And you go, oh, yeah, I'll take it back.
That's how a rebuild starts, isn't it? Because you want everything to look factory fresh.
Well, he says it's got lacquer peel on the roof and a few other bits he wants to tidy up in the future. So really cool, though. It's like metallic. I can't remember what colour that's called. But it's dark metallic blue 110 station wagon. Very nice car.
Yeah, I don't know the colour.
Yeah.
But no, brilliant. Loved it. Bodes well for a really good year for events, that does.
Well, what a way to kick it off.
Yeah.
Really, really. Yeah, I came away feeling like...
a bit energised.
I was excited to go and I was buzzing when I left. I thought, yes, this is going to be a brilliant year. I'm proper keen.
There was barely any ground left to park on.
No, I know.
The Land Rovers and cars and trucks kept coming in. I was thinking, wow.
Yeah.
Wow, this is busy. And you know, we do everything we can to get the queue down as fast as possible.
Hmm.
One thing people may have cottoned on to is the fact that if you pre-book a ticket to our events, you will get in quicker.
100%.
Because we just, you know, a cash transaction or a credit card transaction does take a lot quicker than scanning a ticket.
No, it takes longer than scanning a ticket.
It does, I said, it takes a lot longer, didn't I?
No. But yeah, so basically, it makes total sense to pre-book. Mm. You can pre-book up to midnight the day before. So you haven't, like, if you're unsure if you can come because of another commitment or if you don't know if the weather's going to be good enough or whatever, you've got until midnight on the Saturday to pre-book for the Sunday. But it's cheaper, you save a bit of money, and you literally fly through the gate, don't you? Like, there was a huge queue for people paying cash and card, which is fine. You know, we're happy to see people wherever they're paying, but it really does make a lot of sense to pre-book.
Head
to landrovermonthly.co.uk, hit the events tab, and you'll get all of our events for 2026, and of course you can buy your tickets for them already. So happy days.
Yeah, good stuff. Right, have we or have we not got some listener questions?
Do you not want to hear about what I bought at the auto drive?
I didn't see you do a buy.
I did buys. Oh, I'll tell you what.
Hang on. Go on, then.
So the 200 TDI...
All right, then. You want me to segue. Well, did you buy anything at the show this weekend, Martin?
Well, thanks, Steve. As it happens, I did, yeah. I bought a front wing for the Series 3.
Oh, you found one?
Yep, I found one. New old stock. Went and saw the chap. Ian had already snuffled it out for me, and he sent me a picture, and it's pointed me in the direction, so I went and got that. So I just need a bumper and an outer wing skin now, and then paint them up, bolt them on. I bought a... what else did I get?
Nothing beats an adventure in a Land Rover, and our sponsor, specialist insurance broker Adrian Flux, agrees. To support your journey into the great unknown, they offer Land Rover insurance on all types of models. With cover in the UK and Europe for off-roading and green laning, they're well equipped to handle even the most rugged landy escapades. Call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote, or search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information.
Oh, front grille for the 110.
Okay. On the original type.
Yeah.
Grill.
Yeah. Because the grill's been on and off that, because the engine's been in and out and it's basically gone brittle and fallen to pieces.
Okay. That would have been cheap, wouldn't it?
Tenner.
Okay. Yeah.
So I was happy with that. Because the aftermarket ones, they're not huge money, but they all seem to be a really glossy black.
Yeah, they do.
And I didn't want that. I wanted it to match the headlight surrounds, which I don't need to replace. So I bought an old grille to go with old headlight surrounds. So it'll look...
I understand.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a very good point you made.
So I was pleased with that. I very nearly bought some magazines and stickers off a chap who had a table full of really cool old magazines, like International Off-Roader and all that stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I had a good old nose through them. And I bought a valve spring compressor.
Ah, I did see you walking around. I thought from a distance you'd bought like a G-clamp.
No, it does look a bit like
a G-clamp. It does look like a G-clamp.
It kind of works like a G-clamp, to be fair. Mm. But I do own a valve spring compressor, but it's miles away in my unit. And it probably... I got a beautiful old Sykes Picavant valve spring compressor for 12 quid. I would have spent double that picking up my very good one. So...
Yeah, bargain.
I love vintage tools. That's one thing I love about the auto jumbles as well, is there's trays and trays.
Yeah, there are.
Just really high quality old tools. You never know, like Imperial spanners, beautiful brittle and like King Dick spanners and stuff like that. Awesome.
I just thought of something.
Go on.
Right? So if you are listening, this is a bit of a, this might be far-fetched. If you're listening to this podcast and you bought some two of identical things that are shiny and new and you left them somewhere, tell us what they are and where you think you left them, and they're yours. We bought them back.
Oh, did we find something that someone lost?
Somebody has bought a pair of something new and shiny.
Right.
And they might be galvanized. They are galvanized.
Oh. Okay.
Yep. I've left them somewhere. But if you can tell me where you left them and what they are, they must be yours.
Fair enough. You heard it here first.
Editorial at lrm.co.uk.
Yes, indeed.
Bit far out there, but we brought them back here, so if they are yours.
Well, someone will be missing them, won't they? So hopefully
kicking themselves because they've...
And we can arrange collection.
Yeah.
Talking of editorial at lrm.co.uk, that's where you send your questions and feedback. Would you like some listeners' questions?
Oh, yes. Go on, then.
We have got a little bit of a backlog because we've had guests the last 2 weeks, would you believe?
Oh, yeah, of course. We have.
So, let's crack on with them, shall we? Adam Parkins has been in touch. He says, evening, I've been listening to the pod now for quite some time and I absolutely love it. I thought I'd drop you a message about my Land Rovers. The first one was a 2011 Freelander 2 and I loved it until it broke, and unfortunately I wasn't in the right headspace to fix it at the time as I just lost my old man after a long illness. So out the door that went. And fast forward a few months, I came across a 2002 Discovery 2 with only 88,000 miles on the clock, completely original, from factory, still on rear air suspension. What a find.
Nice.
Sounds very good.
That's facelift as well, isn't it?
2002 could be either.
Yeah, it's on the cusp.
Yes.
I imagined it to be a facelift.
Okay. It could be either. I snapped this up as it had always been on my garage list and only paid £3,000 for it, so it was a bit of a bargain. A few little modifications. Later, it's still staying firmly put and it easily fits all of us in, plus the two dogs. Then, as always, us Land Rover folk, for some reason, can't stop looking at what else is out there to add to the collection. It's true. Mm. He says, now, I've always wanted a P38 V8, but without owning a garage and the fact that I enjoy being married, I couldn't pull the trigger and buy one. Luckily for me, it was actually my better half who sent the advert over to me on Facebook. I had already seen it, but she doesn't need to know that. Not sure if we were supposed to read that bit out or not. Maybe she doesn't listen.
Yeah, but as soon as your better half sends you something, that's green light going in it.
100%.
Before they change their mind.
Strike while the iron's
hot. Yeah, absolutely. That's a buy. Definitely. Yeah.
So with this permission, or as good as can be, I went to look at it. And needless to say, I made a handshake deal to buy, okay, a 2006 Range Rover Sport 4.4 petrol V8, so the Jaguar AJ V8, not supercharged, naturally aspirated.
Okay, decent.
Not too many of them about, but really nice. Same engine as the Discovery 3 V8.
Yeah, nice. Good buy. That's good. Yeah.
He says, oh my days, what a bit of kit. He said, happily, the previous owner has done a fair bit of work to it and was also a member of my local 4x4 response team, so it's fair to say it's ready to go. It's probably also worth mentioning that fortunately for me, I'm a welder by trade. As for the marriage, I'm still married, but I doubt I'll be buying a third Land Rover to add to the collection, in brackets, unless the wife finds one she likes and sends it to me. Fair play.
There's a hint there.
Keep up the brilliant work. Long live the pink sofa. Hashtag in the pink salmon sofa we trust. I'll send you some pictures, and on and my Instagram, if you want to have a look, is at 2002 Disco 2. So head over and have a little look at Adam's recent purchase if you fancy it. I have to say, I often think about
Unimogs.
But also how petrol-powered Land Rovers are often the better buy over their diesel counterparts. If you can stomach the fuel cost.
Yes, but it offsets against potential issue.
Like our pal Greg, in fact, who was on a couple of weeks ago. He's bought, I hope he's all right with us saying.
Well, it's a bit late now. You might have let the cat out of the bag.
Petrol Discovery Sport.
Yeah. Which is, I think...
the one to have.
Well, I spoke to somebody the other day about this, because as soon as Greg mentioned he was going to look at one, I decided to jump on...
You do, don't you?
Auto Trader and suss out what's out there.
You've got to scope them out.
Yeah, and I did speak to a trader the other day who repairs Land Rovers for a living.
Okay.
And he said, oh yeah, petrol ones are fine. You would very rarely have any problems with them.
Yeah, it
so
is.
So it almost... Yeah, and this trader, as you know, would possibly moan a fair bit. So for him to be positive about one, they must be good.
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
What I'm saying.
I think, yeah, obviously there's an element of volume. You're not going to see that many petrols because there aren't that many petrols. They wouldn't have sold that many petrols new. But they are, I've not heard many bad things about the Ingenium petrols in Land Rovers and in things like Jaguars and other cars that use them. I think they're actually pretty good.
Yeah. I don't know whether the fuel consumption would be horrendous in one of those, to be fair.
Probably high 20s, I would imagine. Probably you'd get more. You'd get high 30s on a run, I dare say. Greg did mention he'd done a bit of research, and they're not horrendous.
Hmm.
Especially when you're not replacing the DPF, the timing chain, the turbo.
The true cost of motoring isn't just the fuel it uses at that time.
No, definitely not.
No.
I
would look at one.
I would. Well, in fact, we did look at one on the Land Rover approved use website, and it was like £16,000 or £17,000, an early petrol Discovery.
Oh, yeah, you saw that one. I don't think I... Oh, no, you did
show
me.
I showed it to you, and it sold literally within a couple of hours.
Yeah, but it didn't hang around.
So, yeah. But even going back, you look at like the Freelander 2 i6 petrol, a rare thing, because no one in the UK wants to put fuel in them. Six-cylinder Volvo engine.
Oh, yeah, that Jordan.
Yeah, Jordan.
So he's got one. Yeah,
It
did blow up.
Ed Evans had one, in fact, as well. Our tech editor had a pre-production one. Really, really nice thing. If you can afford to run it, there's not, like, it's a naturally aspirated petrol engine. There really isn't a great deal to go wrong on them.
You see, in modern diesel terms, I know we've probably touched on this already, but if you are doing shorter runs, you're not doing the up and down the A1 all day long, or the M1 or whatever road you're on, then a petrol is probably a better option.
It is a better option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Would it be a better option, say, for you, from where you live? Are you, because you're what, 50 minutes away from here?
Yeah.
So to commute to work, because you're not in every day.
No, it wouldn't make sense for me.
Yeah, and me.
I'd drive.
So basically what we're saying is, let's go and buy some petrol Land Rovers.
Well, don't forget...
Well, you have one.
Yeah, I do.
It just happens to be about 9 miles to the
gallon. Oh, I'm looking forward to getting... I'm actually going to run the paintbrush over the Series 3 as well, because I scratched it up pretty badly after I'd first finished it when Green Lane...
Oh, you did. You did.
And made a complete mess of the bodywork. So I'm going to... I've decided... Because I've put the Exmoor Trim 3/4 canvas back on it now.
Yeah, that looks nice.
It does. It completes it. It doesn't... It's not quite as airy and like light in the cab as when it's on, but it does make it a lot more useful. And that's really shown up the scratches in the bodywork. So I'm going to run the roller over it again, and I'm going to put that wing on. And then I'm going to buy a new set of wheels.
Oh.
So
Steels?
I think I'm going to stick with steel wheels. And I think I might even stick with white 8 spokes. But I want a fresh set. Because everything on that looks nice now.
Did you see the new white 8 spokes on Beartown Tyre Stand?
No.
Oh, so that hasn't fueled your desire?
No.
Okay.
They're literally, up until I had the exhaust done at demand, Dan did a lovely job on that. That let it down. Now the exhaust looks great. The chassis looks great. The bodywork looks great. The canvas looks great. The wheels look terrible.
They do. They look like you've put some temporary wheels on. Because they're old and rusty.
They are. I think I bought them off Neil Watterson, and I think he bought them in about 1997, something like that. They're not in a good
condition. They've earned their keep, haven't they?
So I could rub them down and paint them, but...
You also unveiled something on Instagram the other day.
Oh, yes.
Are we going to have to talk about that?
Yes, I think so.
I was blown away by what you've made there.
Well, I can't take full credit for the body.
Okay, of course.
So fair. I would never claim that I have the modelling skills to do a body.
You with modelling skills has made me laugh to say.
But, you know, get a mankini out. there's a vision for you. It's not even summer yet.
Martin's mankini.
Anyway, my 1/10 scale Boom Racing Series 3 109, which is a... Oh, I love it.
I've only seen it on Instagram reels. Yeah. So
I built the chassis and I put the winch on and things like that.
How many hours did you put into it?
How many hours did it take to build the chassis? Not that. It wasn't that. Maybe 7 or 8 hours.
Okay.
Taking my time.
Yeah. Enjoying the process.
Yeah. And it is a beautiful kit to build. If you've ever built any kind of radio control or static model, the Boom Racing Series BRX02, they're called. They're fully like metal ladder frame chassis, like a real one. It's got leaf springs. You can adjust how many springs are in each pack to adjust the height and the stiffness. Proper suspension dampers, proper gearbox, 2-speed gearbox, transfer box, high and low range. The axles are gorgeous. If I could build another one tomorrow, I would. But I knew I wouldn't do the body shell justice. So I Paul Shevlin, really nice guy, comes to LRM Live with the Boom Racing stand.
Oh, yeah, yes, yep.
He took on the body and he has done such an amazing job replicating my 109. The colour is bang on. It's got white 8 spokes on it. It's got the worn 8274 on it. It's got a customised canvas tilt, the same colour as mine. I am so, so excited to get out and use it.
To have a replica of your actual unique Land Rover as well. It's not like a kit you just bought off the shelf. Yeah, fantastic. It did make me think, and I said to you about
yes
it, the Al Craig, the Land Rover that got me into Land Rovers, which is a complete, imagine a scale one of those,
that'd be wicked,
and then 3D print me as a 9-year-old standing. Oh, this mad idea. It's just, you know, you're driving along and you just think, and then put my uncle in the driver's seat and replicate what that was back in the 19 Yeah, in the late 80s.
You'd have to do it mainly off photographs, I suppose.
But there are enough photos of that car. But they're like the front wings kind of missing and, there's no actual seats, proper seats. Well, there was a seat, but it was made out of box tubing.
Not so comfy.
Crazy.
In fact, you mentioned, did I see the wheels on Beartown stand and that's what's prompted me to buy fresh 8 spokes? No, in fact, the radio-controlled Land Rover has fresh, lovely, white, bright 8 spokes on it. So maybe I'm copying that with the full-size one.
So full-size is now modelling on... Yeah, that's interesting.
Because
yeah.
I was going to weather them, so they looked kind of like the ones that are on the big one, but then it doesn't really make sense because they're pretty scruffy and they let the look of it down. So I'm going to... That's like... Okay.
Yeah.
Apart from that, the last thing I want to do to that Land Rover is I do need to sort the steering out. The steering box is getting more and more worn. Like, you can feel it's not happy. And I think setting out the off-road course at Newbury where we were off-roading start to finish for 2 days straight, the steering box has got a real roughness to it.
Well, that will accelerate any sooner transmission.
I did clean it all out and put fresh oil in it and reseal it when I re-chassied it. But it's... I think the... Because I have a worm gear on the steering column.
As soon
as that gets pitted and worn, which mine is, they just feel horrible. So... Britpart do a built Santana spec right-hand drive steering box, so I might try and get one of them which is a full, obviously you can rebuild them, but getting the steering shafts is a nightmare. So I might see if it's worth investing the money, isn't it? Because rest of it's done.
It's not going anywhere, is it?
No, exactly. So that'll be the last piece of the puzzle. I love that Land Rover. It's so good.
This is it. So it's like my TD5. I still love it.
Mm.
And like some days I don't love it as much as other days because I'm not in the mood. I need to get somewhere. And then others I just think, this is awesome.
What a cool car.
It is just cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Listener's question. Sorry, I went off on a big tangent.
You did. That was huge.
Hi, Martin and Steve, says Kai Ames. He says, absolutely love your podcast, which I discovered around the time of purchasing Doris, my 1997 Defender 300 TDI 110 County Station Wagon.
Good choice.
I bought her in July 2024 in Bolton on the Water. Incidentally, 5-minute drive from Jeremy Clarkson's Hawkston Brewery. Speaking of green Land Rovers, I was told mine was previously resprayed Epsom Green, which is a newer colour than Doris would have had. Can you confirm? No, I think 1997 they would have been Epsom. I'm sure they would have done. They were certainly doing the Discovery 1 in Epsom Green around that time, so they would have been doing Defender as well.
Yeah, my mate had a 1994-90, and I always thought that was Epsom Green.
I'm pretty sure that is the correct colour for that year. Yeah, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, I think it is. Yeah.
Additionally, the roof has been replaced for one without a sunroof. One less leak spot. And he's he's attached to this email a screenshot of the official Defender water ingress rectification process, which I remember that big old thick book, like an Argos catalogue from when I was in the main dealer.
A whole book devoted to
water ingress prevention and rectification. Yeah, it's very funny. He says, I would appreciate your advice on steering boxes. Funnily enough, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
He says, for context, 11 months ago, my mechanic noticed that Doris would fail her MOT due to a leak on the steering box, even though it drove absolutely fine. I had it replaced with one supplied by an aftermarket company, but he says it's overly sensitive when steering right, but initially unresponsive when steering left. Not an ideal driving experience, but I've been forced to get used to it as I've moved house twice since then, meaning I haven't had much spare time or money. Or space for that matter, so none of the golden triangle. On Monday, I had a Land Rover specialist assess the steering box and they confirmed that the box was faulty despite it being fitted correctly by the first mechanic. See, my initial response to that would have been someone hasn't set it up properly when they fitted it.
Mm.
But by the sounds of it, that isn't the case. He says, I haven't returned my original steering box that came off to the company because the one that I bought never worked correctly. But the 12-month part warranty is about to expire. They've made it clear that the warranty doesn't cover the labour costs associated with fitting the steering box. I feel your pain having removed it.
How much labour costs in a steering box?
Well, there's a few hours work, isn't it, to do it properly.
Is it?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Set it all up properly. And
I've only ever done it on a chassis. I've never set it up.
I've never put one on. They're right to do, but it's a bit of work. Okay. He says essentially his options are splash out £1,200 on a new genuine Land Rover steering box from Keith Gotts, which others have reported to make a noticeable difference to the driving experience due to the lack of worn internals, which is what I'm hoping to achieve with my Series 3, funnily enough. Option two, have my original leaking steering box reconditioned, which I do remember drove fine, which will keep the vehicle more original but risks problems associated with reconditioning. Can you recommend a specialist and a reasonable price? Option three, risk another reconditioned box for about £400 from one of the online retailers but possibly have the same problem again. And ideally, I'd like one garage to source and fit the new steering box so everything's covered in one place. So what should he do? Should he have his steering box reconditioned? Should he buy another aftermarket one or should he buy a genuine one for £1,200?
So if a genuine one is £1,200, the labour would probably put that job up to...
It's going to be a few hundred quid on top, isn't it?
Would you say nearly £2,000?
I don't know. Depends how much his garage charges.
Eight hours at £100 an hour?
I don't think it's going to be 8 hours. It's going to be a few hours.
Not a few. 3 or 4 hours.
3 hours, 4 hours. I don't know the book time off the top of my head. If I'm being completely honest,
still 500 quid.
Yeah.
That's a £1,700 job.
I would argue the case with the supplier of the steering box. I would do your very best to get your money back.
On the
one that's clearly wrong.
So I presume the one that he's already got is an exchange, is it? So you have to.
So yeah, it would have been, but he hasn't sent his original one back because
he's unhappy
it's been
with
faulty.
The new one.
Yeah.
Right. You need to deal with the issue.
Yes.
Immediately.
Yes. It's a tricky situation because, like me, you've left it.
Yeah, but if it's within 12 months, it's within 12 months.
Yeah.
So they'll owe him money for... Oh, no, he's probably paid more for his original one, the replacement one, because he hasn't exchanged the other one to get the
core,
money.
Possibly.
Core, yeah, probably. The exchange unit hasn't been returned.
Given that it's £400 for a aftermarket one, I don't know... Because the reconditioning thing is an open-ended question. Because if they get the box apart and it's got more wear in it than, you know, usual, or some parts are
damaged
obsolete,
parts or something,
you're going to be no further ahead. If it were me and I was planning to keep it a long time, I think I'd probably put my hand in my pocket and get a genuine one. Easy for me to say because it's not my 1,200 quid.
Yeah. Does he say if it's his main car?
Oh, he doesn't mention it.
No, see, again, it depends. If you're only doing like 2,000 miles a year...
Hard to justify, isn't it?
Yeah, but if you're doing... If it's your main car and you're doing 15,000 miles a year and it's like... And you intend keeping it, £1,200 is money well spent.
It's, yeah. So
plus the cost of labour.
An absolute pain to have to fork out that sort of money, but...
Buy cheap, buy twice.
1997 vehicle. It's 30 years old, coming up to 30 years old now. If the original box has done that well, 1,200 quid over 30 years, I know you won't have owned it for that whole 30 years. It's not that bad, is it?
No. There's a saying, isn't there, about...
A poor man spends his money twice.
No, not that saying, but I'll stick with that. Okay. I can't remember the saying I was going to think. But, you buy cheap, you buy twice, don't you? So I would go that way.
That said, I would definitely argue the case about the...
Oh, yeah, that needs addressing.
If it's proven that the box is actually faulty, if it's been manufactured wrong, you need to really press that and get your money back for it, because that's not good. He says, PS, looking forward to the big Land Rover Festival in Newbury to use our fairly new Latitude Explorer roof tent. So far, it's been brilliant. I think it's particularly well suited to a Defender as the hinges and struts are all on the inside and the case is solid aluminium, meaning I can still load things like pallets on the roof without causing damage, as there's little to snag on trees, etc., when green laning. And, of course, driving the on-site off-road course at Newbury, which we need to go back and fine-tune.
Yeah, in the better weather.
Yeah, and we will. We'll do that.
Mm. No, nice. Well, it all depends. If you've only got... The thing is, or that, though, if you've only got, say, 1,500 quid to your name, you spend it all on a steering box, it's all down to budget, isn't it?
It really is.
I don't know, it's difficult.
Yeah, again, it's easy for us to sit here and go, yeah, spend £1,200. But if you're, like you say, if you've just moved house or whatever and funds are a bit tight, then, yeah, you've got to do what's right for you. But don't get don't let it lie.
Address that issue with the old box is my advice.
Certainly, certainly, certainly. Steering boxes are a funny one. I mean, like I say, reconditioning them, you're going to be without the vehicle if you've only got one steering box and you needed to get it reconditioned, and it's going to have downtime, which isn't a problem if it's not your own car, your only car.
Mm.
But hard to say, really.
It's one of those things, you only really appreciate how bad the other one was when the new one's perfect.
Yeah, that's very true.
Then you go, wow, how on earth did I live with that? Now I've got this.
Very true indeed.
Finding the right parts for your Land Rover or Range Rover shouldn't be an off-road challenge. At bmh4x4.com, we've built a smarter way to get you back on track. Our new website is now live, the simple, fast and reliable way to find the parts and accessories you need. Supplying quality parts for Defender 1983 to 2016, Discovery 1, 2, 3 and 4, Range Rover Sport 2005 to 2013, with Range Rover P38A and L322 coming soon. All parts are backed by expert knowledge, quick delivery and a 2-year quality guarantee. Visit bmh4x4.com, built by enthusiasts for enthusiasts.
Oh, this is a good email. James Stapleton's got in touch. He said, I've just read on the BBC News website that Helen Tate Wright and Marcella Kirk have just completed the Dakar Rally. What a fantastic achievement and a good reminder how a well-prepared Land Rover, teamwork and determination can achieve very difficult tasks. I enjoyed reading their previous preparation articles in LRM, and it's great that they have achieved their objective. Well done, Helen and Marcella, and everyone who supported them, James Stapleton. Good news for you, James, because in the next issue of Land Rover Monthly is a full Dakar Classic report from Helen and Marcella themselves. So keep an eye out for that.
Agreed.
Yes, absolutely.
Look forward to that.
Real, yeah, serious achievement for both of them. Absolutely awesome. And, of course, their mechanic. Just goes to show that Land Rovers, they'll do it. Doesn't matter the conditions.
They're prepared.
Exactly, yeah. Preparation is, of course, key. Right, another one. We're rattling through them today, aren't we? Mm. Don't forget, if you want to, if you've got a question or a comment on a previous podcast or even just a bit of feedback, you can get in touch with us, editorial@lrm.co.uk. And yeah, we love to get your feedback and your questions. So Russ Bland has got in touch off the back of a previous podcast about us yarning on about engines as we do. He says, me again, Russ with the 110 double cab.
Oh, right, yeah.
I've been listening to this week's podcast, well, a few weeks ago now, and the chat about Puma engines, so TDCI from 2007 to 2016. He says, I've had quite a few Defenders and Discoveries, and he still owns a 1985 90, which has a 200 TDI in it. So I've experience of owning and running some, well, most of the engine types. He says, I've had a 2.5 petrol, 2.5 naturally aspirated diesel, 2.5 turbo diesel, 200 TDI, 300 TDI, TD5, and a 2.4 TDCI. So, yeah, you've pretty much spanned the diesel range there. So the 2.4 TDCI is in the aforementioned 110 double cab. And he says, I have to say, I love the Puma in the 110. It's got loads of power and torque. It's got a mild remap on it, which is great for towing heavy caravan. And he says, it's the best tow vehicle out of all the Land Rovers he's had. And he said, to be honest, other than the 2.5 turbo diesel, he's always been very happy with the engines, but I do favour the Puma for power and drivability as an all-rounder, especially on the motorway where it will effortlessly and quietly cruise 70 miles an hour. The 6-speed gearbox obviously helps with this. And I know a couple of other Puma Defender owners who've also had lots of different Land Rovers over the years who think the Puma is a good choice for a daily all-rounder. Many thanks, Russ Bland from North Yorkshire. So maybe we'll see Russ at Ripon.
Yeah, no, they are. I was following one yesterday, actually. Well, they were following me until they were too. I was in a hire van coming down the M42.
Yes.
And it just came past me, like, effortlessly. It was clearly doing his 80, 85 miles an hour.
He was sticking within the laws of the speed limit.
Yeah, well, exceeding it by a little bit.
Okay.
But you know, I was doing about 17, they were doing 80, 85 easily.
Right.
In a TDCI, Defender 90, there was just no way you could do that in an earlier type.
No, I agree with you.
They are a lot better for the road.
I think from a technical point of view, they have their issues. 2.4 injectors, things like that. But to actually use and drive, I have no issue. The only thing I don't like about them is sometimes when you go to change gear, the revs hang. Have you noticed that?
Oh, yes. Oh, no, big time.
Not a fan of that.
No, because that prevents you getting a smooth gear change.
I think a remap would sort that out, because it's got to be to do with the calibration.
They do. In fact, pretty much every TDCI I've driven that is totally standard, I've been a little bit disappointed in the way that you get that backlash from first or second gear because the revs hold on. You can't smooth the gear change out.
It's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. Whereas with a remap, the ones I've driven with remaps, much, much better.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be anything leery either. It just smooths out that torque curve, doesn't it?
No, like stage one, something like just that little extra does help.
Makes all the difference, doesn't it?
Mm. Yeah, I would seriously consider one myself.
Yeah, I wouldn't blame you.
I looked the other day and the prices are still, for something good, they are high.
Yeah.
They are still holding their price.
Well, that's it, isn't it? That's the one of the many upsides to Defenders.
Did you see the double cab on yesterday at the show in the Kildare Hall on the roof venture stand?
Yes, very smart.
That was really smart. That was a really turned out, well turned out vehicle.
Definitely. Yeah, they had some good stuff on show, actually.
They
did. Good snoop.
Nice to see that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
That made me stop and look. I like that Land Rover a lot.
It just goes to
show.
There's
my love of a double cab right there.
I'm warming to them.
Yeah, but that had like a box on the back.
Yeah, canopy on the back.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was, but what sort of canopy was that?
It was a hard one, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like a truck.
It wasn't like it wasn't like an Arthur Williams one.
No, they're a nice fiberglass one.
Proper job. And just a well turned out motor that was.
Mm.
Very smart.
Good stuff. Would you like, for the first time in about 3 weeks, feature of the week?
Oh, I forgot we still did that.
We do, yeah. Sometimes, yeah. I remember. So the March issue of Land Rover Monthly is on sale now. It is an absolute blinder. It's Land Rover Monthly and Land Rover Life packaged together for your convenience and pleasure. It is an absolutely cracking issue, and you should buy it because, amongst the other fantastic Land Rover features, is this 110, which is responsible for you. You'll instantly recognise it because it was in the news not that long ago. It was for doing the Bering Strait expedition, Cape to Cape.
Okay.
A white 110 double cab, funnily enough.
Hang on a minute. We're going to get some fan mail about double cabs. Oh, yes. That's fantastic. Yeah.
As soon as you see an image of it, you know exactly what it is. Really, really cool. Built for the 2008 expedition, but actually bought kind of by mistake by someone who just wanted a Defender as a work vehicle to help do up a house. And they bid on it in the Cheffins machinery auction, somewhere I used to spend quite a lot of time as a youngster for other reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
And he won it. And there was only two bidders. I won't give away too much of the story. You need to find it out in the March issue of Land Rover Monthly. It's cracking. But essentially, he bought it not really knowing its provenance and has since learnt about it. And now it lives at the Dunsfold collection. So really, really cool. Amphibious Land Rover for expedition use.
They, in the Dunsfold collection, don't they have a 90 that they can put floats on side as well?
Probably.
Because I've been in it.
Really?
On the water.
Have you?
Yeah.
When?
When Land Rover ran their 65th birthday celebrations at Packington Hall Estate.
Yes.
I had a fantastic day. Went ploughing in a Series 1.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, a Series 1 80-inch with a plough on the back. Had a go at ploughing, and they had that. And somebody didn't drive it. I sat in the back because the person driving it had to be trained.
Right.
And yeah, just jumped in, and we went across a lake.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Not many people can say they've done that.
I've kind of like, as soon as I saw that, I thought, I've actually been in something. I'm sure that is owned by the Dunsfold collection.
Probably is. It would say on their website.
Yeah, I'll need to look that up.
They've got so much awesome stuff that it's very difficult to keep on top of.
So, yeah, that's a surreal thing, really. Sitting in the back of a 90 on the side seat.
Bobs across the lake.
A lake. Very slowly. Cool.
I would imagine.
It wasn't fast.
No, I wouldn't have thought
no
it was.
No speed boats. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Land Rover didn't do anything to celebrate the 10 years of Defender rolling off the production line, did they?
No.
It was all a bit hush-hush.
I
was a bit, I have to say, a little bit disappointed.
Yes, I could see why they perhaps wouldn't. A little nod would have been nice.
A nod?
But
yes.
You're kind of, you don't. In fact, our friend from the Pint of Petrol podcast covered this really well.
Tim, I must listen.
He does PR like for a living, like he knows what he's on about. And he said that actually it would have been a mistake because you're making people look backwards when they want to look forwards. And why would you draw attention to something that's been out of production for that long? I think it's good to acknowledge heritage, but...
Yeah, no, valid point.
And I believe they've probably got their hands a bit full at the moment with the Jaguar, which they've been blasting around Sweden or something. I've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
So they're very busy driving Jaguars in the snow.
You talk about the same Jaguar that was rumoured to be bringing back a petrol engine, and there's an AI image of somebody putting fuel in it.
Oh, I don't know about that.
That's not happening.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. Definitely not happening.
Shall we have a product of the week? This will be right up your street, actually, because you've been banging on about going on adventures for the last few weeks.
I have, in fact, been on about going on adventures.
This is the book that you need. It's called The Unbeaten Track by Sam Watson. A fantastic guy, very, very experienced with overlanding. Where he hasn't been isn't worth knowing about. He's got some cracking Land Rovers. He's written for LRO and LRM. As it says in the blurb for his new book, Sam Watson will be a name familiar to many Land Rover owners, having written numerous magazine articles about exploring more remote areas of the world. This book is a series of accounts of his adventures, including tales of chasing elephant poachers in Kenya, being shot at by border guards in the Sudan, and being arrested for spying in Egypt. It's filled with great photos and sees him driving all sorts of Land Rovers from Series 1s to Classic Defender. And it looks wicked. Even the cover makes me want to read it as the cover.
Yeah.
Land Rover in open desert.
Yeah, lovely.
The Unbeaten Track by Sam Watson. So if you want to grab yourself a copy of that, it's £30 and you can buy it from zerzura.me, which is zerzura.me. Go and grab it. And obviously you'll see it in the March issue of Land Rover Monthly. So
Very good. No, it's nice. It's nice to see new books coming out.
Definitely. Yeah, there's been a few in the last couple of years. It's been really, really good. Shows that there's still lots. I mean, Land Rovers are there's always up to something. There's always something to talk about. It's brilliant.
Would you ever write a book?
I was asked to write a book a few years ago.
About what?
Restoring Land Rovers.
Okay. Yeah.
So, a technical book.
What, like a Haynes type? They used to put out, like, books, didn't they? More generic.
Sort of, yeah. Sort of that style. Yeah, but not the same size as a Haynes. It would have been a smaller book, like a physically smaller dimensions. And I sort of thought about it. And in hindsight, I should have done, but I didn't.
Yeah, like restoring Land Rovers for beginners or just restoring Land Rovers?
Yeah, sort of like a bit of a rough guide, I suppose. So what to look for.
You should do it now.
I haven't been asked though since, so I'd probably
write one then. There you go. No, I mean, I think people would buy it.
Potentially. Maybe if I get asked again, I'll reconsider it.
Who do you need to be asked by?
A publisher.
Why can't you self-publish?
I don't want to.
Okay. No, because you can, can't you?
You can, of course you can. But if... No, I mean, there's a few publishing houses that do Land Rover books. If one of them asked me again, I might consider it. But at the time, I had way too much on.
Well, a bit unlike now.
Well, I've still got way too much on, but I'd quite like to have a book. So
it would be lovely.
Out of pure vanity.
To have a name to a book.
Yeah, it'd be quite nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you should do it.
Maybe.
We'll editorial see. LRM.co.uk if people are keen on Martin writing a book.
Yeah, great.
Well, and if we get more than 5 emails, he has to do it.
No, not
how many emails must we get?
No, it's not happening like that. I'm not going to self-publish a book because I got 5 emails.
Yeah.
I'm going to
5 people said I should do it, so therefore I'm putting myself through absolute hell.
No, I don't think it would be that bad. No, it's a real commitment. You've got to once the ball is rolled. That's what put me off, and the fact that. Let's just say the incentive wasn't there for me to do it.
Okay.
Because you have to source all your own pictures.
We're talking about financial reward.
Basically, you have a budget. This is how it was laid out to me.
Yes.
You would write the book. It had to be X number of words, X number of pages laid out, etc., whatever. Okay. Didn't have a problem with that. They then said you have X budget for getting the photos. And obviously, if you have, I have a lot of photos, but if I don't have the photos of everything, I need to source those images. I'd have to pay for the images. And the budget for getting the images wasn't what I would need it to be. So I thought on that basis, plus I've got way too much other stuff on.
Yeah, that's
I'll pass on this occasion. But if I was asked again, I would consider it.
Okay, so if you're a publisher out there, I mean, I wouldn't get involved in that. I have got no... Yeah, they always say that everyone's got a book in them.
I've heard that phrase before.
Yeah.
Sounds painful.
Yeah. What would my book... I couldn't write about Land Rovers. I don't know enough.
What would you write about then?
Well, what's
your book in you?
I don't. That's my point. How to annoy my colleagues.
Yeah, you could write a good book on that.
Yeah, well, that would probably be good. I don't know. I actually don't know. I've thought, what would I write? But about.
Great question.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got an idea of what Steve should write a book about, editorial@lrm.co.uk. And on that note, we're going to call it. We're going to come back.
I need more caffeine or something.
Need to lie down. Anyway, as always, thank you ever so much for listening. Follow us on Instagram if you want. I'm Land Rover Martin, and you are?
Steve Miller Automotive.
Follow Land Rover Monthly on Instagram, on Facebook. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. And if you don't mind, if it's not too much to ask, we don't ask a lot of you, leave a little rating or review on your preferred streaming platform for the podcast. It really helps us. Helps us justify doing it, really, doesn't it?
Yeah. No, it fuels us. We love reading the comments.
I'm still buzzing after yesterday. I think that was a great day. I'm keen for Ripon now, and I just want to get back out there. And
It is great. I would do a show every weekend if I could. I love it. Yeah. I absolutely love it.
It's awesome.
As long as I didn't have to work Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't do it back to back. But, yeah, I would more than happily do an event every single weekend.
Yeah.
Because it's live, it's happening. Mm. It's a buzz.
Definitely. Well, we've got some crackers in the calendar. Of course, LRM Live at the same venue at Three Counties Showground at Malvern in May.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
16th and 17th of May. Don't miss it. It's going to be a really, really good weekend.
We've just booked this morning, actually. I'm not even going to give it away yet, but some more stuff for the arena.
Awesome.
Yeah, really good stuff. Do you know about that?
I have a rough idea. I think we spoke about it the other day.
But yeah, brilliant. Just stuff that you don't often see.
It's, yeah. And then, of course, yeah, LRM Live, Three Counties Showground. There's nothing like unzipping your tent in the morning and seeing the hills with the sun rising over the Malvern Hills. It's always just such a delightful place to camp, isn't it?
It's worth being there even if there was no show on. Like, if there was no show, you would go, people go camping this campsite, it's all right.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
And it's just a lovely area to be in. Yeah, it is.
It's cracking. And then, of course, the big Land Rover Fest, our new event, 11th to 13th of July.
Yes.
Don't miss that at Newbury. We're going to go back and fine-tune the off-road course, and we'll get some other vehicles around there and make sure it's suitable for everyone.
Yeah, a lot of people have been asking, oh, will the Freelander go around there? The course kind of is designed that a Freelander would go around.
Yeah.
We just need to prove it.
Absolutely. Yeah, so we've had a few offers of Freelanders and Discoveries and Range Rovers to take us around. So, yeah, could well do, actually.
Yeah.
Freelander 2 just continues to impress. What a fine machine.
I spoke to somebody yesterday whose Freelander 2 has got nearly 300,000 miles on the clock.
I can well believe it.
Yeah. And they said it's still going strong.
Yeah.
That's on its original turbo.
Cracking cars.
Can you believe that?
Hopefully mine will get to 300k on its original turbo.
Anyway, we were supposed to have gone like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
So shall we...
I suppose we should. Yeah. Cool. Thanks ever so much for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye for now.